I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi-yo. Welcome to Kiwi's Birth Tales. My brother name is Ollie and I'm Die Boy. Thank you for listening from Mommy's podcast. See you later.
Kia ora and welcome back to the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast. I'm your host Jordan. I'm a mum of two. I've got Jai who is four and Ali who's 2.5. I also have a business baby, Your Birth Project. If you're pregnant or know someone who is, then you need Your Birth Project in your life. If you've heard the podcast before, you would have heard me talk about it, but it is an online hypnobirthing course. It is going to change your life for the better. It is going to help you to have your best birth, which is the most important thing. I also have in-person courses launching actually next weekend. I'm so excited about them. The first one next weekend at the Pure Mama Studios here in Papamoa. So lots of exciting things happening for Your Birth Project. Make sure you go and check it out if you want to have a better birth. Today I speak with beautiful mama Lucy and she takes us through her pregnancy and birth journey with her first son. And she ended up having a general anesthetic emergency cesarean section. So it was quite an extreme birth story in the end. But she's a scabunus or a PICU nurse. So she talks us through her sort of version of how she's worked all of that through in her own mind. And yeah, I just think this is a really interesting story, so I'm super grateful that Lucy was willing to share with us all, and I hope you loved the episode. I'd love to hear from you. Feel free to send me an email, Jordan, J-O-R-D-Y-N, at kiwibirthtales.com, or follow me on Instagram at kiwibirthtales or at yourbirthproject. This week's episode is proudly brought to you by Huggies. I have been a Huggies mum for 4 years now. They are the brand I keep coming back to time and time again for the boys because they do exactly what I need them to. They don't leak, they're comfy, and they're soft on their skin. I was super excited to hear from Huggies about their range of newborn nappies, a revolutionary product to the nappy market, the zinc-enriched nappy. These come in infant and newborn size ranges. If I was pregnant or had a baby in this size range right now, I would literally run out the door to get my hands on these. They are the only nappy on the market with a clinically proven zinc-enriched layer to help protect against skin irritation. And if you didn't know, zinc is an ingredient commonly found in nappy rash creams. So the added zinc helps protect your baby's delicate skin. Everything I love about Huggies is still the same. The same absorbency, still endorsed by Plunkett, and still the number one nappy choice in New Zealand hospitals. Just with the added skin protection through the zinc enrichment. Amazing. Tested on adult skin as a suitable substitute for baby skin.
Hey Lucy, thanks so much for joining me on the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast today.
Hello, thank you for having me.
No worries. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about you and who's in your family?
Absolutely. So my name's Lucy. I'm 31 and I live in Auckland. I am a nurse. I work at Starship's PICU, so the paediatric ICU. So I do that as well as retrieval nursing. So we travel around New Zealand picking up babes who need specialist ICU care. So I've done that for about 5 years now. So it's a pretty full-on job, but I do love it. I'm very passionate about it, and I can't really imagine myself doing anything else now. So I love it.
Yeah, awesome. And who is in your little family?
Yes, so our little family, there's my husband, Junior. We've been together since we were 16, so a very long time. Almost, I think it's longer together now than not. Which is crazy to think about. So there's the two of us, our beloved first baby, Pearl, who's our cat, and our son, Ariki, Freddie. He is 13 weeks tomorrow.
Amazing. Very cool. And we're going to talk through, all things mum life and your journey to sort of where you are now. But why don't we start with what the journey was like to pregnancy for you and Junior?
Yeah, so we've obviously been together a very long time, but we both weren't in a huge rush to have a family. We knew that we had quite a few things we wanted to do before that, so we wanted to travel, and we're originally from Wellington, so we moved to Auckland about 7-8 years ago, so we wanted to kind of build our life here as well. I was quite keen on building my career, which I've done. And we have a ton of nieces and nephews that we've been able to dote on until now. So we definitely didn't feel like we were deprived in the baby department. So we got married in 2022 in March. And so after that, we were pretty keen. We kind of went 0 to 100. We'd kind of been living this life. And then we're like, actually, you know what? Let's get married. Let's have a baby. Let's do all of those things. So we did. I'd had a copper IUD. I'd had a couple first. Probably close to 10 years, so two of them. And so I got that taken out just after our wedding, and we were very, very fortunate enough to fall pregnant pretty much straight away. So the first month that I actually tracked any ovulation, just with the timing of when I got it taken out, we fell pregnant. Yep. So, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. And did you feel like you knew you were pregnant? Did you have any early symptoms that made you take a test, or what did that look like?
Yeah, so I had just got back from New York. I was visiting my brother over there, and I had a feeling when I was over there that I was pregnant. I had always had very regular periods, and I was a few days late. So I kind of had this inkling in my head that that was probably a sign, and it would be pretty bad luck if that was just, you know, a coincidence. Yeah. I didn't want to test when I was over there because I didn't want to tell Junior over the phone, and I also there was no way I was going to be able to hold on to that and not tell him, so I kind of just tried to not think about it until I got home. And I was pregnant, so yeah, that was very exciting.
Yeah, amazing. And how did you tell Junior?
So I had this, you know, I had all these grand plans of telling Junior that I was pregnant. Yeah. And so I got home actually, and I took a test, and it was negative. And I was like, "Oh, that's." And then I was really upset. I called my best friend, and I was like, "Oh, this, you know, I was so sure that I was pregnant, and you know, I just hope this isn't going to be hard for us," which is ridiculous because it was the first month that we'd tried to, you know, conceive. Yeah. And just got was really upset about it, and you know, whatever. Took the test. I took another one, threw it in the drawer, and was like, "Well, that's fine, whatever." Junior came home, went out for dinner, and then I just went into the bathroom, and I looked at the other tests that I'd taken. So I'd taken two and they were negative earlier in the day. And then I looked at the third one that I'd thrown in the drawer and it was positive. And I just ran out of the bathroom like, "Oh my God, this is positive." So not the way that I planned on telling him at all. And so then we went to the supermarket, and I must have looked like a crazy person because I bought probably every test, different brand of tests that were there, because I wasn't taking any risks again. So did that, came home, all positive. So it was, we found out pretty much together, which was nice because, that was what I kind of wanted anyway. But it wasn't kind of, you know, the picture perfect way that I planned on telling him, but it was, beautiful nonetheless.
For sure. Amazing. And how were you feeling in your first trimester? Did you have many pregnancy symptoms?
Yeah, so I was pretty lucky in the first trimester. I just had just a bit of fatigue, but nothing major. I didn't really have much nausea, but I just didn't have much of an appetite, so I was kind of having to just eat things that would agree with me, but no nausea or vomiting. Work was a little bit tricky, doing night shifts. Doing night shifts and 12-hour shifts, I just was absolutely wiped by the end of the day. Had amazing, well, I was going to say amazing work colleagues, but I hadn't really told anyone in my first trimester that I was pregnant, but just a couple of good friends that I had told, and the people that I had to tell just for certain reasons were amazing at just being accommodating for me. So it was pretty much work was the only thing that I was doing, because if I wasn't working, I was asleep. I think I got away relatively scot-free with the first trimester nausea, and I was pretty lucky.
Cool. And did you decide on a midwife for your care, or what did you do there?
Yeah, so I thought that I was being super, 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 early and quick on jumping on finding a midwife, but actually realised that it it's quite difficult. I went through the, I think it's called Find My Midwife online, because I think I was about 5 weeks when I found out. And so I just jumped straight on there to have a look, and I found my amazing midwife. I found her on there. Just the little, I call it Tinder for midwives, because you kind of just like swipe through and see, you know, who you connect with. You're like, hey, that person looks good, I'll give them a message. So, and she was available, and yeah, so I found her, and she ended up being amazing. So I was so happy. We just kind of had the same, just, I don't know what the word is really, but just the same values and our kind of thoughts around birth and things, because just coming from my background, I have a relatively medical perspective on it. That's just the nature of, you know, how my brain works now. And she, hers really correlated with that as well. So we got on really well, which was great. I was very lucky to get her.
Oh, and did you do like all of the standard testing that's offered to you in pregnancy? And did you want to find out the sex of your baby?
Yeah, so we did everything apart from the NIP test. So I tossed and turned with the NIP test for so long and tortured myself about whether we should do it or not, just because of, in my job, you know, we see a lot of cases come through of babies who do have genetic conditions. But at the end of the day, we kind of figured that it wouldn't change anything. We'd do the regular testing. If we were high risk for anything, then we would go ahead and do it. And I think the pressure I was almost finding was more I felt that I should do it rather than I wanted to do it because I wanted to find out. And so when I finally got my head around that and that it was more, I was stressing more about the pressure of doing it and decided not to do it, I felt really comfortable with that decision. And everything on the standard testing came back as negative, well, as low risk. So we just proceeded with that. We had all our scans and they were fine. I had a lot of anxiety going around the anatomy scan, just because of that's in my job, we have a lot of babies coming through who are having congenital heart defects corrected, and that's where they scan for that. So just I think any nurse that I work with has the same anxiety surrounding that scan. It's almost, you know, the gender's an afterthought compared to just finding out about the four chambers of the heart, or, you know, all that sort of thing. So so we had that scan and it was all thankfully normal, and we did find out the sex. Junior and I were both so sure that it was a boy, and he was a boy. And so we were pretty excited about that.
Amazing. Very cool. And how were you feeling in your second trimester? Did you get, like, some people talk about that second trimester glow where you get a bit more energy back? How were you feeling?
Yeah, I definitely felt that. I definitely felt a kind of new and energized feeling in the second trimester. I feel like it's that kind of, I called it the honeymoon phase, because everyone knows that you're pregnant now. You've got a beautiful little comfortable bump, you know, and that kind of exhaustion's gone away. I felt amazing. So, yeah, I loved my second trimester. That was, really treasured time. That you're just really, you know, excited about being pregnant. It's still relatively new. Your bump's comfortable, you know, but it's really cute and little, you know, but it's still obvious that you're pregnant. So, yeah, I loved my, the second trimester for me was really great.
Yeah, cool, amazing. And did you do any, like, antenatal classes or any birth education in your pregnancy?
Yes, so we did NEST antenatal classes. That were just local to us. They were amazing. Junior, my husband, I think, loved them more than I did. He found them very educational. It was great.
Oh, cool.
And he was really excited about those. But if anything, I kind of just wanted to do them to meet other, you know, new parents that were living near us as a support group. But actually, we took a whole lot out of them in an education sense as well. So that was great. But yeah, we've met amazing friends that have gone through the journey with us. And so if anything, that's why I kind of encourage anyone else to do them, because, you know, you meet people that, even people who've been pregnant before, once you've kind of gone through it and you're on the next phase, it's very easy to forget what it's like going through it when you're actually in it. So I found that you connect with people like you've never connected with people before when you're kind of going through that journey with them. So, yeah, I'm really, really thankful that we did those and have met some amazing friends.
And did that give you, or did you have any, like, other ideas about how you wanted your birth to go, or, like, things that were important to you from a birth perspective?
Yeah, so I really tried and kind of went into my birth with no expectations. I kind of, you know, in terms of a birth plan, I didn't want a plan. I just wanted to have nice to haves is what I kind of called them. As, you know, ideally I would like to have this, but if not, that's fine, you know, and just that was kind of how we worked through that. I've been someone who's, I've dreamt of, you know, having a baby and birth and all those, you know, everything that comes with it for a long time. So I felt like I was relatively educated in that sense. I've watched a lot of One Born Every Minute, you know, thought I knew the whole process. And just, yeah, I loved everything about birth. It really interested me. So, yeah, I kind of had a relatively good idea of what I wanted. I was, you know, I was going to try for a relatively natural birth. I wasn't adverse to anything if I wanted it in the moment. That was fine. I felt like, just because of my background as a nurse, I felt very confident in advocating for myself. I was going to have a hospital birth because that's just where I felt comfortable. We live relatively central, so our local hospital is not far away at all. So that was, you know, a comfort for me. I knew the hospital. I used to work there, so it was all very familiar. So that was, that was kind of the plan that we went down.
Awesome. Cool. And take us through your third trimester. Like, how were you feeling towards the end of it? Were you doing anything to try and like bring on labor or prepare for birth? What did that stage of pregnancy look like for you?
Yeah, so our son grew a lot in the third trimester. So he went from the 75th percentile to the 95th. So as you can imagine, I also grew a lot in that third trimester. So towards, well, at the end, I was very uncomfortable. I was very big. And so, yeah, it all became a little bit harder. I worked up until 36 weeks, so just before Christmas. So I was doing all the things to induce labor. I was, you know, when I tell people, I say it's like a full-time job, you know, if you're not drinking the tea, you're eating the dates, or you're on the ball, or you're doing the site, you know, we were doing it all, the walks, the beach walks, the curb walks, on the ball, doing the all the exercises. So we tried everything, but he was pretty happy and comfy in there.
Fair enough. And did you do antenatal expressing or anything like that?
I tried, but I wasn't super successful with it. So I kind of felt like I was just, it was more stress than it was worth, actually. So I figured, you know, once I give birth, then he, you know, he's going to feed then. So, kind of just left it and was like, try not to stress myself out too much.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important, right? Because, like, you know, I talk about antenatal expressing sometimes on the podcast or through social media, and it's obviously a great thing to have if you can, but it's also not like an indicator of your breastfeeding success or
I think I agree. There's so many things that we're kind of told to do, especially in that late stage, which is, you know, a really emotional and stressful time anyway. You're uncomfortable, you know, the thought of giving birth is looming, and you know, I kind of felt like I've got to be doing this by this time and all these things. But actually, you know, speaking to other mums, they're like, you know, it's fine. They're still, you know, when they come and they're going to feed, and it, you know, it's fine. They're going to eat when they need to, sort of thing. You know, if you can do it, amazing. Yeah. That's great. But it's not worth torturing yourself over, essentially.
For sure. Awesome. And do you want to take us through your labor and birth story? How far along were you? How were you feeling? And then, yeah, take us through what happened next.
Yeah, so in the last few weeks of my pregnancy, I was having a lot of Braxton Hicks, which were just such a trick. You know, everyone, you're like, is this it? And then no. So I was 41 and 1, and I woke up in the morning about 6 o'clock, and I thought I was having more Braxton Hicks. My husband went up and went to work. I kind of didn't go away. I started to record them just out of interest. And they weren't, I wouldn't say regular, but they were consistent in the sense that I was still having them a few hours later. So I kept recording them. I just texted my midwife and said, look, this situation. I was seeing her anyway at midday. So she said, if it progresses to be too much, don't come in. But if you're still in a position to come in and see me, and we'll just see how you're going. So I kind of just potted around the house for the day. I was still having them. So I thought, okay, maybe this is something I don't want to get excited because, you know, I've had these for, you know, almost over a week now. But, you know, I text my husband. I said, oh, I probably shouldn't drive to the appointment with the midwife, because if this is labor, it's probably not super wise. So then he was, you know, straight in the car, so excited. He was more excited than me, I think, for labor to be coming on. So he was straight in the car. Yeah. He was home within about 5 minutes. I was still having them. They were pretty mild at this point. I was still, you know, walking around the house, kind of pottering around, very comfortable. Didn't feel as though I needed any Panadol, pain relief or anything like that. Went to see my midwife about midday. She examined me and said, yeah, it looks like you are in labor. So I was about 1 to 2 centimeters by this point. So very early on. And she said, go home, just try and get some rest, because it's probably, you know, going to be a long haul from here. You know, all very well and good to say, go home and you're in labor, the most exciting thing in the world. Go home and have a sleep. It's like, oh my gosh. So we went home. By this point, it was about 2 o'clock and they were definitely starting to ramp up. So sleep or rest was not really on the cards. My plan was to stay at home for as long as I felt I was able to, so that you know, a comfortable environment. I had a lot of labor adjuncts at home, in the sense of I had my Swiss ball, I had a TENS machine, which I loved. So I was taking paracetamol regularly. I started using the TENS machine when my midwife kind of described it as you feel like you can't talk through the contractions and you've that kind of toe curling pain. So I started using that, and that was amazing. So I kind of took away the severity of them at that point. I think I was about 4 to 5 minutes apart when I started using the TENS machine. So still recording, still timing my contractions. I found that really helpful. Yeah. I'm very much I needed to count down the contraction in my head, kind of looking at, okay, it's a minute. I just need to get through this minute. And once that's over, you know, just kind of mentally keep myself in it. And then by about 7:30 p.m., the contractions with the TENS on full blast were feeling like before I'd even put it on. So we kind of maxed out on that. And my contractions were about 2 to 3 minutes apart. So at 8 p.m. was when Junior and I made the call that I couldn't really handle the pain at home anymore. I'd kind of tried everything. It was getting to the point where it was a bit unbearable. So we called our midwife, and she said to meet her in the hospital. So we went. Luckily for us, the hospital is only about 15 minutes away. It was 8 o'clock at night, so there was no traffic. Still, the car ride was horrendous. still have visions of just looking out the window and, you know, kind of just like over the seat and locking eyes with people at traffic lights and just thinking, oh my God, this is just the worst. You know, in the moment, you couldn't care less, but thinking about it now, it's just like, oh my God, they must have thought, what's going on? You know? And Junior had to go over and just tell our neighbours, you know, don't be concerned about the noise that's coming from our house. It's just Lucy and Labor. So we got to the hospital pretty quickly. We walked in, and this is kind of where I took a bit of a turn. So we got to the birthing suite, and we were straight into the room. They knew we were coming. Our lovely midwife had called ahead. By that time I just went to the bathroom, I'd lost my plug, so I was thinking, oh, this is great, you know, things are moving along, you know, I'm definitely in labor. I don't know why I had any doubt in my mind. I think, you know, I'm severe contractions about 2 minutes apart at this point, but that just, you know, was a nice confirmation things were moving ahead. Had a Doppler on my belly, and he seemed happy at that point, so his heart rate was about 140, so normal. And then luckily my midwife was only about 5 or 10 minutes from then away. So she got there and she said to me, let's just put you on the CTG. We'll just see how he's going. It's your first baby. We'll just check out how he's looking, and then we'll just go from there. We'll get you on the gas if that's what you want. And so that was great.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, as soon as she put me on the CTG, it was very clear that he was not happy. His heart rate resting, not in a contraction, was about 180, 190. So very, very fast.
Wow. Yeah.
Then when I was having a contraction, he would drop down to about 70. So critically low at that point. So we'd had discussions at my 40-week appointment. I had a lot of anxiety about meconium aspiration. At my job, we see the worst of it. Yeah. And I know that just it's a very slight risk, but there is an increased risk when you go anything over your due date, just because the baby's mature. And so I was actually due to be induced the next day anyway because of that anxiety. I didn't want to get much further than 41 weeks. So he was pretty stressed. She'd kind of talked to me about if anything was looking wrong, she was going to press, you know, the emergency bell, and there was going to be a lot of people. So that was at a kind of pre-appointment. So she said to me, look, I'm going to press the bell now. There's going to be a lot of people coming. So she pressed the emergency bell. There was everyone there, which was just amazing. You know, we had such great care there. We had everyone that we needed within probably seconds, within a minute. You know, there was a lot of midwives, senior midwives, a registrar, an OB registrar. So they tried to position me. Unfortunately, that didn't really help. He was still having these big dips with and without my contractions, and his resting heart rate was still really high. So my waters hadn't broken at this point, so they were going to break my waters to put the little clip on his head so that they could more accurately monitor his heart rate. So they did that. And as soon as they broke my waters, they said that it was full of really, really thick meconium. So as soon as they said that, I just looked at my midwife in her face. And she's like, you've got to be kidding me. And I just started to, that was when I started to panic a little bit. I just was kind of saying, get him out now. I don't care what you do. I was only 5 centimeters at this point. So there was no way I could get him out myself. So at this point, they started talking about having a cesarean, which I was always fine with. I didn't want an elective, but I was not adverse to having a C-section if that was what I needed. Yeah. And so they said, we're going to have to do a C-section. So I was like, that's fine. I don't care. I just want you to get him out. So my husband was getting changed into the scrubs, you know, the whole thing. And then they said, actually, no, we don't have time. We need to get him out now. And I said, I don't care. I don't care what you do. I just want you to get him out. So that was when they started floating the idea that I was going to have it under general anaesthetic. Which in that moment, I didn't care if they did it right there and then in the room. I just wanted him out safely, I think. So they said that I was going to have it under general anaesthetic. I said, that's fine. So they started to take me down immediately to theatre. So they're kind of putting in lines. There was a lot of people there putting in IV lines, catheters, all the things that you need for theatre. I think my kind of saving grace for me was that environment is very familiar to me. I've worked in theatre. I've, you know, the hospital is not a scary place for me. So I think this going into a theatre, I knew what everyone did. I knew why they were there. I knew what everything did. I knew about all the medication. You know, that aspect of it was not frightening to me. And I can imagine how terrifying it would be for people that are not familiar with that. For me in that moment, the only thing that was scary was that I knew that my baby was not happy and that he was potentially being compromised. So they took me straight in. Junior, my husband, wasn't able to be in there, which was pretty upsetting. But I think he was, it's all a bit of a blur, but he was able to be outside the room. So that they were going to be able to take Ariki out there as soon as he was born. But luckily my midwife was able to be there and I had a really good connection with her. I had a lot of trust in her from the get-go. So I knew that she was kind of my person in that moment. So I was able to have her right there with me, which was amazing. So I had full trust in her. I had full trust in everyone, but it was just nice to have someone that was familiar to me right there with me. And I knew that she, if there was anything, that she would be able to advocate for me. So went under the general, from the minute, so I got to hospital at 8:24, he was born at 9:28, which is just unbelievable to me. I can't believe that he was born with it. They had him out within an hour of me walking into the hospital, which is just unbelievable. So felt so grateful that we were in a place that had all the resources to do that. Felt very, very lucky. We just had such amazing care. So he was born. He was not super happy when he was born. He was, they call it, quite flat. So he was getting a bit lazy with his breathing, but they were able to help him out with that. So he went on a bit of CPAP. So they, at this point, had then realized that he'd aspirated the meconium. They weren't sure how severe it was. There's such varying degrees of it. Some babies can aspirate a little bit and be completely fine. Some not so much.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So I was still sedated at this point, and they took him out to Junior once he'd kind of perked up a little bit, and he was able to have a bit of skin-to-skin and a cuddle. But Junior kind of noticed. He said, oh, you know, I think his breathing's not great. I don't think he should be breathing this fast. And yeah, then they had another look at him, and he just needed a little bit more help. So yeah, that was when our skiboo journey started.
And did you, like, obviously you're you've been under general anesthetic, so you're not there for any of this. Did Junior go with him to skiboo? Did he, like, wait for you in recovery? What sort of happened in those initial moments afterwards?
Yeah, so my parents were up, they had been up from Wellington waiting very anxiously for their first grandchild. So Junior had messaged them when I was being rushed off to theatre saying, oh, you know, things are not quite going to plan. I think you should probably come in. So when I woke up in the recovery room, they were there with me, and Junior was actually still there with Ariki. They were just about to wheel him off when I woke up, so I was able to see him before they took him off to skiboo, thank goodness. Yeah, just got a quick little kiss, got to see his face, and then Junior went off with him to skiboo, and my parents were able to stay with me. I was really lucky. That was the first general anesthetic I'd had, and I actually woke up feeling pretty okay. I was really sore because I didn't have an epidural or a spinal or anything like that, but I wasn't nauseous. I didn't, yeah, I was pretty lucky, because I know that a lot of people wake up and they feel just so rubbish. So yeah, I was pretty lucky in that regard. And yeah, Junior was able to go with Ariki and stay with him when he went to skiboo, so that made me feel good that I wasn't by myself, and neither was he. So yeah, we both had our parents with us.
And did you, like, was it the morning or the evening when this happened?
Yeah, so he was born at 9:28 p.m. and
p.m.
then, p.m. and then I woke up at about 11, I think. The only reason I know is from photos on my phone. Actually, I think it was about 10:30, and that was when he went up to skiboo, and then I went up to the postnatal ward.
And how were you feeling? Like, such a shock, I guess. Like, you don't expect that to happen.
No. I think I went into it with such an open mind, like, birth in itself, and but that just was not even on my radar at all, you know. I was very open, you know, if I want an epidural, I'm more than happy with that. If I want to do this, I have water, you know. If I need a C-section, fine, but having a C-section under GA was not even on my radar. I didn't even really know that much about it. I'd never heard of anyone that had that before. It was just, it was a total shock, but I was so out of it. So I just didn't really grasp kind of what had happened, probably for a few days, I think. It was the middle of the night, so it was just crazy. I didn't sleep at all that night, so such a blur.
And did you, like, once you woke up the next, or you said you didn't sleep, but once it was the morning, did they help you to, like, get up and have a shower, and, like, were you able to go and see Ariki? Like, what did that look like, that sort of next stage?
Like I said, I didn't sleep that night. My brother lives in London, so poor him, had to talk to me all night, because I was just like, I feel like I need to talk to someone, but everyone's asleep. And so and I had a couple of beautiful friends who were actually at work in Piku, and so they were on the night shift, and I was messaging them, and I don't even really want to look back and see what I was saying, but it was just nice to be able to feel like you're connecting with someone, you know, because Junior was just absolutely exhausted, so he went off to sleep. But they were actually amazing. They took me over to see him that night, so they wheeled me over there in the bed, which was just amazing, and I got to see him properly. He had the big CPAP mask on, so I wasn't really able to, you know, see his beautiful little face, but at least I felt like I was able to see him. And then they wheeled me back, and I tried to go to sleep. That wasn't really happening, but so the next day then it was kind of when sunlight came up, it was like, okay, this is really happening now. This is, you know, I've had a baby. I don't feel like I've given birth to a baby, but I've had a baby. He's not with me. It was kind of a strange feeling that he was not with me, but he was like, he wasn't in my belly, but he also wasn't with me. Yeah. It was quite a strange feeling. But yeah, they helped me get up into a wheelchair, and then Junior was able to wheel me over there as much as I wanted to be there, essentially. So I pretty much spent most of my time over in Skibo and would just go back for pain relief. Luckily, it was just that they gave me my own room, which was the closest room to the Skibo hallway. They're right next to each other at the hospital that I was at. So that was such a blessing to be able to just very easily walk over there, and you get a little swipe card and you can just go any time of the day or night. And they're always very welcoming to have you come. So that was great. Got up and had a shower. Junior helped me with all of that rather than the nurses, but they were amazing, very accessible to me. And then kind of just had, it was a lot of information overload at this point because it was like I'd not slept, and then we'd gone to Skibo. They'd kind of given us a rundown of what had happened. Jody, our midwife, actually had three other births of her, you know, clients that night. So she was like, I'm so sorry, but I have to go for a sleep. I was like, that's fine. So we caught up with her later on in the day. She came in and saw us, and just everyone kind of telling us what had happened. So it was just a bit of information overload at that point, and kind of figuring out what had happened, and it was still in a bit of disbelief that the thing that I was the most anxious about had ended up happening. I just couldn't believe it. And it was quite a strange feeling being on the other side of it all, you know. And there were actually a few nurses that I used to work with that were working, which was just strange. And just being on the other side of it was a bit funny.
And when you said, just like, because I had my first son was in Skibo when he was born too, and I had no idea that I could just like go down there for the first day or two. I didn't I thought I had to like wait for someone to take me there, I found that really confusing. So it's really nice, obviously, like, you're familiar with the environment, so it's really nice to hear, like, you know, you were given a swipe card and it was like you could go down there any time of the day or night. And I just think it's important to call that out for anyone who's listening that ends up
there is no such thing as visiting hours when you're the parent at all. You are not a visitor, you are their parent. So it's the same in Piku, that where I work, we do not class parents as visitors. They are not visitors. So any time of day or night, we were very much welcomed to come and see him. So I think it helped that I already knew that. And I think they were very clear with Junior when he was first admitted that we were able to go anytime we wanted to see him.
Awesome, amazing. And so what sort of happened next? Take us through how long you ended up with him in Skibo for, and like, what was the concern, how was his breathing progressing? Talk us through the next
So it was a lot longer than we thought it was gonna be. We and I think it was a lot longer than everyone thought it was gonna be. Usually meconium aspiration with the severity that he had would normally just be kind of maybe 2 or 3 days. I think that's what Junior thought it was gonna be. That's what the doctors thought. You know, they kind of were like, oh, hopefully it's just a little blip, you know. So he was initially on bubble CPAP, so it's the big mask on the face that everyone's probably seen, but he only needed that for a few days, so that was really good. And then they put him on high flow, which is just the nasal prongs, which was nice because then we could at least see his little face, and he was a lot more accessible, so we could get him up for cuddles and all that sort of thing. So that was really important for us. I think it was quite hard for me because of the birth that I had. And it's really horrible to talk about, but I think in the first probably day, and I was also absolutely exhausted and post anesthetic, I did find that connection quite hard just for the first day. I didn't help that, you know, that's my job. I look after babies on, you know, all of these sorts of things. Of course. And so it kind of was like hard to connect that this was actually my baby, you know, it wasn't another baby that I was looking after. So that was quite difficult. But so he was able to go onto the high flow. We got him up for lots of cuddles and all that sort of thing, which really, really helped me, especially. And so, yeah, we ended up there for 12 days, which was, I don't know, it's kind of one of those things that it felt like 5 minutes, but it also felt like a lifetime. You know, it was like, I can't believe it's been 12 days. But then also, I feel like we've been here forever. You know, it feels like we live here now. Yeah. So, yeah, we kind of progressed. I was able to feed him, which was amazing. That really helped with that connection. I feel like as soon as I started doing that, I just felt that bond immediately, which was amazing.
Had you been pumping, like trying to pump before that? Or
we had a specialist midwife, a lactation midwife, come and see me in the postnatal ward. She helped me with hand expressing. Junior and I laugh about this now because, you know, those first hand express, you get about a third of a mil, and that's like the most exciting thing in the world. And then 3 days later, I was pumping up 2 bottles, you know, one each side.
Oh,
like,
my gosh,
the contrast was just hilarious. So she was fantastic. She came and took me all through the hand expressing. She set me up with the Medela electric pump, and like my supply really flooded in, and probably the second or third day as it does, which was such a blessing because I was so worried that because he wasn't there with me and because I wasn't feeding him that I was going to have real trouble. But by some miracle I didn't, and when I went to feed him, he fed straight away. So that was that was a bit of a miracle in itself, actually. Yeah. But I kind of said to people, I think if that had not worked, that would have been the thing that would have just absolutely tipped me over the edge. Because at this point, I'm kind of okay. I'm running on a bit of adrenaline, but I'm still managing to kind of hold it together. But I think if that had not worked, then that would have been the thing that would have just toppled me over the edge, I think. And I would have probably, I've been having a bit more of a breakdown by this point if that had not worked, but it did. So, we had lots of really helpful people helping us with the pumping and how to breastfeed. He's a little hungus, we call him. So he just was straight on there. So we did, we alternated feeds. So he'd have one breastfeed and then have an NG feed just so we wouldn't tire him out too much. So I think that really saved my nips as well because they were kind of having a break in between each feed. And I was only doing it every 3 hours. So that was kind of where we were at. He just took a little bit longer than we thought, but he absolutely got there in the end. So we were able to wean off the high flow oxygen. So with meconium aspiration, it's kind of like that really thick coating. So you think of meconium and that's essentially coating their lungs. So as you can imagine, it's quite hard to breathe for them. So so the high flow kind of just helps to support them through that until it can essentially just absorb and go away, which it did. So we got there 12 days later. So it was... Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got there and he's amazing. So he was such a little trooper. It's so hard watching, you know, your baby go through that and watching them kind of struggle. And I'm sure as you know, you've been in there. So it was pretty hard watching him go through that. But we definitely felt progress every day. So that was really reassuring. We probably had one day of a bit of a setback where he needed some extra oxygen and we had to pull back on the NG, on the breastfeeding. And that was kind of that post kind of 4 day blues day. So that was a pretty hard day for me. It just kind of felt like we were making all this progress and it was like, great, you know, I can see us going home the next few days. And then kind of took it wasn't a huge backward step, but it was a backward step. And it just felt so deflating to think, oh my God, are we going to be here for so much longer than I thought, you know, just kind of that end in sight seemed to just go away a little bit. But I think because I was so distracted with looking after him and focusing so much on him and how he was doing, I kind of skipped past the kind of the baby blues a little bit just because there was so much else going on to distract me. You know, I kind of wasn't sitting at home with my baby alone, you know, that kind of like, what's going on? What am I doing? You know, it was on the go constantly. So
cool. And talk us through going home. So how did you find taking him home and like that adjustment to newborn life at home when you're out of the hospital and you just, you know, it's just your little family. So
it was so surreal because, you know, you dream of that moment forever, you know, when you're pregnant and then when you've had the baby. And we laughed about it because we were like, we feel like we're breaking the law, you know, walking out of here with our baby. Yeah. You know, it was like we felt like we were kidnapping him, like we're just allowed to leave with him. What do you mean? So, yeah, we were really lucky that he didn't need any support when we left. He was feeding perfectly, so no NG tube or anything like that. So they, you know, essentially said just treat him like a normal baby. So we were able to do that, which was so nice. But yeah, it was really exciting. Just walking out and coming home with him was just like, I can't believe this is happening. Yeah, just coming home and being like, you know, looking at the things that you've kind of looked at for 9 months, dreaming of your baby in them, and then suddenly he's there and he's in them, and it's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So it was just so exciting. And you know, we had hundreds of people that wanted to meet him, but it was like, oh, we don't want to kind of have anyone, you know, it was like, we're not ready. So we kind of just went into like a little bubble for a little bit, which was really nice. And I think something that I had not really anticipated or was aware of, but I feel like in the first couple of weeks you get this surge of adrenaline and it's like, oh wow, like we're doing so well at this, you know, oh this is great, you know, and you're like, oh this is going so well, and then you kind of like okay, so we're still quite tired and he's still waking up, and then that kind of drops off a little bit, and then you go into like a bit of a lull. But yeah, we're really lucky that Junior was able to take off the 2 weeks that we were in hospital, and then was able to take another 2 weeks off at home, so we were able to kind of just blob at home together as a family. And it was just so nice to just, you know, we'd just those little moments of just sitting on the couch holding your baby, you know, we dreamed of that for so long, and it was like, we're doing it, you know, he's here. It just felt like a blur, the whole hospital experience. So just keep it that way.
For sure. And how have you gone like with your feeding journey? Are you still breastfeeding now, or what does that look like for you guys?
Yeah, so I've been pretty lucky with my journey. My supply very much flooded in those first few days. I felt like I had rocks on my chest, but it really settled out, and now we're just, exclusively breastfeeding. He will take a bottle, so if I need to go and do anything for a couple of hours, Junior can give him a bottle, which is great. I'll only really express if I need to. But my supply, settled really well. I did get mastitis once, which was just awful. I didn't anticipate how quickly it actually floods on. So I remember I was driving my friend to the airport. She'd come over from Australia to meet Ariki, and I kind of said, oh, you know, I've just got a bit of a sore boob, but it's nothing much. It's probably just my bra, you know. And by the time I got home from the airport, so 40 minutes, I was full fever, you know, I was just achy all over. It was just crazy. So yeah, that was not so fun, doing all the things to try and unblock that duct. Oh, it's so painful. Luckily got on top of it with antibiotics really quickly and resolved it. So that was good. But apart from that, it's been a pretty seamless journey, which I'm very, very grateful for, because I was so worried about it being, you know, such an issue. But we were just, really lucky that it wasn't.
Amazing. And when you look back, like when you think about your birth now, have you done much reflecting on like what an experience that was, or like, I guess, how do you feel now when you like think about your birth?
Yeah, I think I'm someone who, my kind of therapy in it is talking about it. I'm very open about the birth and, you know, speaking to my friends about, you know, talking today. She was like, oh, you know, you're going to get really emotional. I think not actually, because that's my way of getting through it. I've spoken about it a lot. I'm very open about it. That's my way of dealing with it. I do, you know, I of course have moments where I feel like we were robbed of that beautiful birth. I've dreamt of giving birth for so long, like well before I was pregnant, and that first moment when you lay eyes on your baby and, you know, just all the things that come with that, you know, that skin to skin as soon as you've given birth, you know, I had all those dreams of that happening, and I had moments of feeling like that was stolen from us. I felt like I'd had a baby, but I didn't have a birth, you know, it was like, where did this baby come from? You know, it was like, just but it was I think just talking about it for me was huge. I had moments of, you know, feeling jealous of, you know, seeing people who had these beautiful births, you know, absolutely so happy for them, not taking away from that in the slightest, but just, you know, feeling like that's what I wanted, you know, I wanted that beautiful birth with my baby, and then feeling almost a bit of guilt that, you know, he was born and, you know, we weren't there, and he wasn't able to have that, you know, even just reading things like in his Plunkett book, you know, skin to skin or fed within a certain amount of time and ticked no, it's like, but I didn't get a choice, you know, it's not that I didn't want it, you know, and just, you know, silly feelings like that. But it's a funny one, but I think having a kind of medical aspect of my brain, I know why they had to do that. I'm more than happy that they did that. They essentially saved our baby by doing it. And so and my mum has a saying that she's always said to me is that you're having a baby, not a birth. Having a beautiful birth is a bonus, but at the end of the day, you just want to have your happy, healthy baby, and that's what we now have. So that's kind of where we're at the moment.
And what about your physical recovery from the cesarean? How have you found that?
Yeah, so I think although having Ariki in Skibu was not the ideal, I think that actually probably helped with my recovery because I wasn't lifting him. I wasn't at home. Yeah. Junior was wheeling me to Skibu every day. You know, I wasn't pushing myself to do things. And so I think that really helped. I've had a bit of hip pain afterwards just from carrying such a heavy baby. So he was 4.17 at birth. And so that I've had a bit of trouble with that, but the actual C-section recovery, I've been quite lucky in that regard. My abdominal strength is definitely coming back. No infections or anything like that. So yeah, I think in that regard, I've been quite lucky with the recovery. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. And how have you and Junior gone? Like, it's just such a huge adjustment to your life and relationship, adding a baby to the mix. So how have you found, the past 13 weeks or so, that whole adjustment in your relationship?
Yeah, I mean, it is a huge adjustment. You know, you're kind of just working through it in this huge blur. It's very kind of task oriented. It can become quite task orientated. You know, it's like someone does the nappy, I do a feed, and then we do this, and then we try and put them to sleep, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. But I am extremely lucky that Junior is just such a hands-on dad. He's, you know, wanted to be a dad for a long time, and he gets up in the night. We have a routine. He'll get up in the night. He does the nappy, passes him to me. Then I'll feed him, and then Junior will put him back to sleep. So, I think, you know, at the start it's such a blur, but, you know, the way that he looked after me after my cesarean and the way that he is so hands-on with Ariki is just, I think now out of that blur, it's just brought us closer together. It's, it's a pretty amazing thing looking at this baby and thinking, we did this, you know, we made this. Like, this is us. It's crazy. So, it's totally miracle. Different. You're so sleep deprived and it's just a whole new kind of chapter. But, I think we're quite lucky that we had a very solid foundation going into it. It's very open with our communication and things like that. So I personally feel very grateful to have such a hands-on and dedicated dad to my son. So not only just to him, but to me as well, just the care that he gave me after such a traumatic thing. I think, to be honest, the birth was probably more traumatic for him. He watched it all. I was kind of in it, but not. So I think. It was a lot, but we were able to kind of just go through it together, and I think at the end of the day it just brought us closer, I think.
And has there been anything like that you've used either for your recovery or like that's just a go-to that has been really helpful for you in the newborn period with Ariki? Is there anything that you'd recommend to others in that sort of initial postpartum period?
Oh, that's a tricky one. I think I've just recently seen a physio, and I think I really underestimated the changes and the effects that birth can actually have on your body. Even if you have a perfect birth, your body completely changes. And I found that really helpful, actually, seeing a physio and just knowing what I should be doing, what I shouldn't be doing. I didn't know when I should start exercising again, you know, all those sorts of things, like when I should really feel like I'm recovering. So I found that really, really helpful for my own recovery and my body, and kind of just, I was so shocked at the loss of strength that I'd had. So that was really helpful for me. And I think in terms of Ariki, I knew about the wake windows, but I had no idea, like, really how short the wake windows were. You know, in those first few days that we were at home, it was like, oh, he's been awake for 3 hours, you know, and it's just like, oh no, you know, we've got to get him to sleep.
Yeah.
So I think really kind of educating myself on that, we use the Huckleberry app just as kind of like a guide as to how long he's been awake. And I found that really, really helpful just to keep a track, because your mind is in 100 different places and, you know, time just feels like nothing. You know, you look at the time, you're like, oh my God, it's been, you know, I can't believe it's 2 p.m. You know, how did that happen? And I'm still sitting here in my dressing gown. So I found that really helpful to keep a track of like, yeah, when he's asleep and when he's not, when I should be putting him to sleep. And really going off his cues as well and just getting to know him and what he needs. Yeah.
Amazing, very cool. And is there anything that you feel like we haven't covered, Lucy, that you want to make sure is in your story, or anything else to add before we close the episode?
I don't think so. I think what really helped with my birth is that the relationship that I had with my midwife and how important that is. Like, it's such an important relationship. I think that if I didn't have the trust in her that I did have, I think that would have been even more of a stressful situation for me. I knew that she would, you know, I had full trust in her that she would give me the best care, which she did. You know, she put me straight on the CTG. There was no mucking around, you know, and I just having full trust in her. And then after the birth, you know, she was so thorough at, you know, talking about what had happened and really, you know, getting into proper conversations with me, because it's quite easy for people to say, oh, how are you feeling? And then for me to say, oh, I'm okay, you know, and then just kind of move on from that. But she really made an effort to get down to how I was really feeling about it and my future birth. So that's probably something I could talk about, actually, is so I had a follow-up appointment after my what they call a crash section and with one of the OBs at the hospital. So that was I think they offer that to people who have had quite traumatic cesareans. So she so this was, I think, between 4 to 6 weeks postpartum. I had an appointment with her. So she checked my wound. She just actually went through my birth and what had happened, if I had any questions. So that was really helpful as well. And then gave me the options for what my future births could potentially look like. So she gave me what my options would be. So if I was to have any more children, which, you know, we would love to, would be I would be offered an elective cesarean. So if I wanted to go down that route, I'm more than welcome to. Or I could try for a VBAC. There's a lot of anxiety surrounding that, because what happened with Reiki, there was no way of knowing whether that would happen or if it could happen again. But she said that we could talk about an induction at 40 weeks rather than going any further than that. So that was an option, or I could just choose to go into spontaneous labor. So I've got all those options. I spoke about them with my midwife in lengths, but I think it's one of those things that I won't know until I'm pregnant again. I said to my midwife, I think I will probably change my mind 10 times during my pregnancy, but I think I'll just kind of have to see how I feel and where my confidence is lying. Because I think also having a C-section with a toddler running around is going to be a lot more difficult than having it for your first, you know, with it not being able to lift him, that would be really difficult. Yeah, but then also having that just takes all of that anxiety and risk. It's a lot more of a controlled environment. So yeah, it's a lot to think about, but that's on the, we'll think about that later. Let's get through this one phase first. But I definitely felt very supported and educated, like going away from it. So yeah, I very much appreciated that.
Amazing. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Lucy, for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
Yeah, I think you've got such an interesting story, and I know that we don't share a lot of GA C-section stories, or haven't had that many on the podcast. So it's really interesting to hear about, and I'm just grateful that you are willing to share with us. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much. Thank you for having me.
Another big thank you to our wonderful sponsor this week, Huggies. The zinc-enriched nappy in infant and newborn sizing is a game changer, and I can't wait to hear all of the listener feedback on them if you give them a try. Make sure you send me a message. I am always so excited by products that help us mums do our best to protect our baby's skin. So thank you for being on board this week, Huggies.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.